going over my experiences in the vice presidency and have seen him many times during his vice presidency. He has not offered me any position, and I think to answer the question as to what I'd do is kind of foolish until you hear whether or not he's going to offer one. But I've enjoyed being in the Senate, and I think that speaks for itself. I wouldn't be surprised. He comes from the Midwest. I think he has a greater appreciation of some of the problems of rural America than some people might have. And I think he will listen to leaders in the Congress, and not just leaders, but to members of Congress. I think you have to keep in mind that this man has had many years, since 1949, experience in the House of Representatives. That leaves a definite impact or imprint upon one's character and upon your attitudes and your way of doing things. So I feel at least there'll be an open mind there. Well, I don't think I should. This is one of the old games down here in Washington. Every time that there's any change, people start speculating who else is going to come aboard. Mr. Ford will have the job not only of nominating a vice president under the 25th Amendment, a nomination to the Congress, but he will also have to make a look at his cabinet. And I hope that Mr. Ford will have his own cabinet and men that are responsible to him and who believe that, who have a loyalty to him. This is not to say that current cabinet members are not able, but I believe the country now wants a sort of a clean sweep, so to speak, a new look, new faces in many places, not in the instance of Secretary Kissinger, as I've said, because I think he's extraordinarily able and a national asset that we desperately need at this time. But I've always felt that one of the mistakes possibly that Lyndon Johnson made was that he never really got around to appointing his own cabinet. He took the Kennedy cabinet, even though these were extremely able men. But they were people originally appointed by another president. And politics is a very human relationship. And I would hope that relationship would be understood. And I think it will by Mr. Ford. Doesn't need to be in a hurry. It'll take its time. Thank you. Well, my good friend, I've always been proud of the political affiliation that I have, just as you're proud of being a Republican, I'm proud of being a Democrat. But when it comes to our country, and it comes to the serious problems that afflict our country, particularly in times like these, having gone through these long months of what we call the Watergate episode, I think we need to bind up the wounds. I think we need to put our country first. And I think that that party becomes very secondary here. And as I said earlier, we may have disagreements. Those are honest disagreements amongst honest and reputable men and women. But nitpicking, carping criticism, trying to be too quick on the criticism, I think is unwise, unnecessary, and I think counterproductive. Thank you. Well, it is a moment of history. I want to say that it's maybe one of the great moments of American history, filled both with tragedy and with hope. Thank you much. Yeah.
So Jim Shoup, Minneapolis Star.
Jim? Yes. Yes, Jim. Well, I thought it was one of the finer hours for the president. The speech was a very high level, an important speech. The whole series of events that have culminated in tonight's resignation is a story of both tragedy and hope. A personal tragedy for the president and a new hope for the nation. I guess that one could say that the long-term meaning of today's events is that our constitutional system of representative government has proven itself durable and responsive. For those that have any doubts about our system, let me just say that democracy works. I do think so. I think that the nation needed this decision. And quite obviously, the president knew that that the impeachment process, that in the impeachment process, he did not have the votes in the Congress. He was told this by his own Republican leaders. I think it's important to note that, as I've said in a statement, that this unprecedented event has occurred not with with disorder and disunity or violence, but with rigorous devotion to the processes of law mandated by our Constitution. Now there's a new day and a new president. And this new president and the Congress have the responsibility of governing and the task of rebuilding faith and confidence in our political institutions. I'm going to pledge my full cooperation in achieving these goals. We've got things to tend to, duties to perform, and the new president will need help and cooperation and time to get his administration organized and his program outlined. I will do my best to help him gain that time. Okay? I'm confident that that the whole nation wants to bind up the wounds and to have a coming together. country is weary and tired of the trauma and the tension of these last months. Mr. Ford will be the beneficiary of a great desire on the part of the American people to settle down and get on with the job of taking care of our problems. Now, as to the Congress, he comes from the Congress. He knows the Congress. He has many friends in the Congress, and I'm one of them. This doesn't mean that there will be agreement on all items, and he knows that. We people in public life can disagree without being disagreeable, and can have our differences. So I happen to think that that he will do well with the Congress. There's a quality of fairness here, wanting to give the man the time to get himself, to get his administration organized, the time to get his program outlined. And I've always believed that a new president is entitled to that consideration. I treated Mr. Nixon that way after 68.
It's time to go over there.
Okay. That's a big question. I'm not sure that I want to deal with that question tonight. If you don't mind, I'll tell you. But it is a central question. There's no doubt about it. Let's try it another time. Thank you. Yeah. That's a very difficult question, and will be one that has to be weighed with exceeding care. I don't think the American people have any desire to punish, and yet there surely is the question of equal justice under the law. I would have people keep in mind, however, that President Nixon has suffered a unique and very unusual form of punishment, which brings with it great pain and personal agony, namely having to resign from the highest office in the land. This whole matter of immunity ought to be studied with care and with time. No need to hurry. Thank you, friend. Bye. All right, what is next?
Senator, those three television stations are over.
Oh, Frank, how are you? Well, he called me. I don't know what, I guess he wanted to talk about the evening. Well, I gave him a call earlier this evening and gave him, or I guess we teletyped our statement over, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, you got that. So we're all right then. If he doesn't, did he call back?
He just called a minute ago and said he wanted to talk to you.
Yeah. Sure. You're right. I can call you back. I'll call him back. I got another line here. We'll call him back. Sure, that's fine, Frank. Bye. is it?
That hall right over there.
Fine.
Thank you for the call. Stay hanging.
Is that what he said?
It's gotta be tougher. Understand how we're called themselves.
Who you calling now?
I'm trying to get the crazy with the house. The line's busy.
Well, we'll take some of those that aren't busy. You got Winona, Minnesota there?
Yeah.
Get him. And much more important than some of those other ones.
He has your written statement, but wanted to take it. So if you have a copy of
it. Yeah, let me have that one.
Talk with you now. Just one second. Are you ready to go?
Bob, how you doing? Well, I'm fine. Ah, you bet we are going to come down to Winona. Thank you so much. Yes, I've got a statement, Bob. Would you like to have me read it? The long-term meaning of tonight's events, the resignation of the president, is that our constitutional system of representative government is durable and responsive to the public will. In other words, that democracy works. And I think that the interests of the nation have been served by Richard Nixon's resignation. The unprecedented event of his resignation has occurred with no real disunity or violence in our country, but rather with a dedicated devotion to the processes of law as mandated by our Constitution. Indeed, the due process and fairness have characterized the events of the past months by the committees of the Congress, the House Judiciary Committee, and of course, by the Supreme Court itself. Now, the responsibility of governing and the task of rebuilding faith and confidence in government now belongs to the new president, Gerald Ford, and to us in the Congress. I think the American people are entitled to have cooperation here between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and I pledge my full cooperation in achieving that goal. So now we have the task of turning to the duty of tending to the people's business. Many problems have been shunted aside for far too long. Our economy is in difficulty, and we have many other problems. There's much to be done. The new president will need the help and the cooperation of the American people. He'll need some time to get his administration underway. I'm going to help achieve that. I have no personal designs or ambitions. While I am a partisan, of course, I am more than that. I'm a citizen, and I want my country to have a chance to get its breath again and to bind up the wounds and to heal the bruises that have taken place in these last months in what we call Watergate. I don't think there's any possibility of that because he will resign, and with resignation he cannot be impeached. You can only impeach a sitting president or vice president or an official. And I don't believe that the House of Representatives anyway would vote a bill of impeachment after the president has resigned, and if the House won't act, of course the Senate cannot act. No, but I noted that Al Quie was mentioned as one of them, but I think this is sort of what we call the name game in Washington. There's Nelson Rockefeller has been mentioned, and Howard Baker, and Mr. Richardson, a host of people. One of the most important decisions that Mr. Ford will have to make is who will be the vice president, who will he nominate to be the vice president, because he's going to need a man that can help him with the duties of office, and someone that will cooperate and be loyal, and yet someone that is experienced and someone that that will be well accepted by the country. That's possible. I don't think that's essential, but I think it's very possible. Above all, what you need in a vice president is someone who, if something goes wrong, has the qualities and the ability to take on the duties of the presidency. That's more important than where he lives or his age. What's most important is his experience and his character. I think there's a feeling of relief in Washington, which I believe is a pretty good a mirror of the country. The country has gone through a long ordeal in this long investigation, charges and countercharges, and indictments and convictions. The whole nation has been tired and weary of it, and knows that there has to be something done to get things straightened out and to start tending to the many problems that confront our country. And I said to a friend tonight that this evening is one of tragedy and yet one of hope. It's a tragedy for personal tragedy for Mr. Nixon and his family, and it's been a tragedy for our government and our country for a long time. But now there's a chance. There's some light. There's some hope. If we just pull ourselves together now, and if Mr. Ford will just reach out to the American people, I think we can start to move. Thank you. Bye.
Finley?
Yeah. Yes. Well, my feeling is that, first of all, the president didn't ask for it, from what I understand, or none of his aides. Secondly, I doubt that the Congress is ready for it. This sort of thing is so far-reaching that it will require, I think, as I said earlier, time and very careful thought, because it's fraught with all kinds of dangers. So I think it's just a little early to make any judgment. Now the president, obviously people are going to say, well, if there's wrongdoing, and of course that has to be proven. And one of the things that Mr. Nixon's resignation did, does not permit the process of impeachment to take place, so that there's no way to say that the charges have been proven. So that when you get to talking about immunity, you really got something that's very, very complicated in light of the circumstances. Well, I'm sure that there aren't very many people that want to prosecute a president or a former president, but that doesn't mean that this couldn't happen. The man has, there's always punishment for wrongdoing, but in this instance, I think the most painful punishment has been the necessity of resignation, the tragedy, the personal tragedy that has come to the man and his family. But again, I'm just not prepared to give you a final answer on immunity, because it's so fraught, it's so filled with the complexity. And I advised a couple of my colleagues that were talking this to take their time, not to hurry it. That the president hadn't asked for it. There have been apparently no arrangements made with the special prosecutor. And that I didn't think that we in Congress ought to rush into this, that it ought to be something thought out with great care. Well, I didn't expect that he would, but I gather that since he was making his final statement as a public official, that he would place it on the highest ground that he could. And he did that. He made it. He did make a fine statement. I think it was one, maybe his best hour, and his best speech. But he did not. He did not admit to wrongdoing. He admitted to error. He admitted to error. Yeah, fine. You bet.
Oh my goodness, I'm afraid that you might be just gonna stay crazy.
I'll get it. Those darn phones, I get so mad. Fine. Well, tonight was an hour of both tragedy and of hope. Personal tragedy for the president and his family having to resign under these circumstances. And we've gone through some tragic moments in our government in these recent months. But with the president's resignation, the interests of the nation, I believe, have been served. And we'll now have a new president. He has a tremendous responsibility. He'll need the cooperation of the American people and of the Congress. I thought that Vice President Ford's comments tonight were constructive and not at all contentious, that he was appealing for cooperation. He'll get it from me. Right now, the country needs to bind up its wounds. The nation is very tired and weary over this long period of trauma and investigations, tension and suspicion. We need to rebuild confidence and trust and faith in the institutions of government and get on with the job of governing and get on with meeting some of these problems that beset us in our economy and others. I think we're capable of doing it now. I think America tonight is breathing a sigh of relief. I believe our spirit, the spirit of this country, will be evidenced in everything that happens in the days to come. I didn't expect that the president was going to admit any guilt. He did say he'd made mistakes, which I think is quite obvious, but the record is there. The record, the public record is there in the Judiciary Committee. The public record is there in the investigative reporting and the Irvin Committee. I don't believe that it was that the president, let me put it this way, by the president not admitting to any wrongdoing doesn't prove that there was none. Thank you.
Dave Hawley, Worthington Globe.